Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And no, the good martini is not a rerun of yesterday, although it's pretty similar. It's about really good polls for Rob Portman. Much of the political headlines today, of course, Jim, and you lead with it in the Morning Jolt today, is that Donald Trump is seeing better polls. He's up 5 now, both in a head-to-head with Hillary Clinton and when you factor in Gary Johnson, Jill Stein, and the other smaller candidates down the ballot. And he's even competitive in Maine, which is kind of surprising to a lot of people. But the poll in Ohio that shows Trump up 5 shows Rob Portman with a 17-point lead, 53% to 36%. Over Ted Strickland. He's leading 2-1 among independents and is even getting a sliver of Democratic support. So he's over 50%. He's running away with this thing at present. And a guy as disciplined as Portman, you have to think, is pretty locked in at this point when Strickland's still under 40%. And so obviously, as we talked about yesterday, Rob Portman is running a smart, detailed, energetic campaign. And it turns out Ohioans still hate Ted Strickland. So it's a pretty good combination.
Yeah, I kind of want to summarize this poll result, Greg, with hooray for boredom. God bless Rob Portman. Very much the workhorse, not a show horse. I don't think he would be insulted if we said, look, he is not a whirling dervish of raw political charisma. Came from OMB. He's always been a numbers guy. But he's going out and, you know, there was this really great detail in Eliana Johnson's piece about how there's this really big concern about pollution and algae blooms on Lake Erie. He's up there and he's talking about the legislation he's passed to address this, the grants he's getting. You know, it was Tip O'Neill had said all politics was local, and people had kind of argued they're not sure that's necessarily true anymore. Are our races now effectively nationalized? Is everything much more polarized? Are people less likely to vote for a hometown lawmaker of a different party than they are, just because he's good at bringing home the bacon or at least of doing something for the community? Well, Rob Portman is showing you can get a decent amount of Democrats. Not a ton, but 14% is nothing to sneeze at. And you can really clean up amongst independents. And so the other thing that's kind of jumping out at me about this, Greg, people kind of forget one of the reasons John Kasich was able to run for president and ran as, you know, reasonably successfully as he did, was that he had won in 2010, which was a good year for Republicans. Ran into trouble, and a lot of people thought, ugh, you know, he's really going to have trouble in 2014. This was a state that Obama had won. Obama won it again in 2012. Democrats, all right, here we go. We're going to have a good time. We're going to, you know, take back the state government. And they nominated a really bad candidate, and it just got worse and worse and worse for them. And a lot of people said, look, yes, it was a bad candidate, but you look at all how bad things were down ticket. The Ohio Democratic Party, I don't know if I'm going to say it's a paper tiger, but it's just not terribly organized. It's not terribly on the ball. And the Obama campaign had come in 2008 and 2012 and really got their get-out-the-vote operations cooking on all four burners and doing everything it should. And in the midterms, the state party really dropped the ball on that twice. Now, I don't know exactly what we're going to see in this November. Certainly, the Hillary Clinton campaign is doing everything she can to pull out all the stops. But you look at these numbers, and it really looks like, once again, the Ohio Democratic Party, outside of presidential races, really does not bring their A game. And you've already seen, you know, Democratic national groups pulling their ads. I think, you know, some folks said, look, it's probably going to be a tough race. Rob Portman should win. Greg, nobody was expecting a 17-point lead in mid-September.
No.
And I kind of argued that, you know, you can make the case. Maybe Rob Portman should be the Republican MVP this year, or just demonstrating how to win a race that was supposed to be close and how to turn it into a blowout.
It's amazing. And the Ohio Democratic Party has been less than serious for a long time. It's only when political factors really get going in their direction, like 2006 and so forth, that things tend to break their way, because this is a party that less than a generation ago was seriously considering running Jerry Springer for statewide office. So,
right. That's right. Well, he was mayor of Cincinnati, right?
He was until he used a city check to pay for a prostitute.
And that's wrong.
It is wrong. But apparently it's a great gateway to a lifetime in reality television, which we'll get to in just a moment. But yeah, this is impressive. So the question, I guess, now, Jim, is we know that Trump really doesn't have any coattails. is Trump riding Rob Portman's coattails in Ohio?
I was actually debating writing about that today.
The question of is your friendly neighborhood accountant actually going to pull Trump over the top? Generally, it doesn't work that way. But it is interesting to see the amount of ticket splitting going on there. And you have to at least contemplate whether if it's, you know, if at some point does this become kind of dispiriting to Ohio Democrats, particularly in light of the various troubles the Hillary Clinton campaign has had. Now, look, you know, she seems to be way more organized in terms of state offices and data driven, get out the vote metrics and stuff like that. But I think right now, look, it's good reason for Democrats to be sweating both across the country and in particular in Ohio.
All right. On to the bad martini now. And this goes back to reality television. Jim, we were going to have the big reveal later this week. That was the plan. Trump was going to go on to the Dr. Oz show and have the results of his latest physical, which he supposedly took within the past couple of weeks, revealed. And it's going to show him healthy as a horse and so forth. Well, part of that's still true. Trump is going to go on the Dr. Oz show, but something has changed. This is the New York Times. Donald J. Trump on Wednesday scrapped his previously announced plan to go over results from his most recent physical examination in a taped appearance with the television celebrity Dr. Mehmet Oz, aides to the Republican presidential nominee said. Instead, Mr. Trump, 70, will appear on the Dr. Oz show, but the two men will have a general discussion about health and wellness, not one anchored to the fitness of one of the two major candidates for president. So, Jim, I haven't seen anything from the campaign about whether they're still going to release the results of the physical or at least a lot more information than the oddly written letter from Trump's esteemed doctor that sounds a lot like something Trump would have wrote from a few months ago. But it's just odd at a moment where you go through all these maneuvers to get this national TV audience to show how healthy you are, and then you basically gut your own rationale for the appearance.
Every time something bad happens to Hillary, a decent number of Republicans, conservatives look at this and kind of left scratching their head and start thinking, okay, how is Trump going to screw up this one? And here we go on this one, because look, you know, he had been very quiet all Sunday morning. His campaign had not been trying to jump on the health issue. You know, that there was enough damage being done to Hillary's campaign. The dishonesty had hurt her more than anything that Trump could say or do. And then when he comes out and says, oh, yeah, I'm going to do this appearance with Dr. Oz. I'm going to release my physical results. It looked like a nice way of saying, look, you people have been asking for a full health report. Here we go. I'm going to give it to you. And thus put greater pressure on Hillary Clinton. And hopefully the contrast would look well for him. Look, Trump said he had the physical done last week. So we assume that he's being telling the truth about that. Maybe not always a safe bet. But let's assume that he had the physical done. When you have a physical done and then say, I'm not releasing the results, a lot of people are going to start saying, wait a second, was there something in there that didn't look good? Is there something that should be a concern? It was kind of this very, you know, it seems strange to have this sudden reversal here. And now he and Oz are just going to talk about general health issues, right? You know, Donald Trump's healthful hints for healthy living. I'd be very curious about what this conversation turns out to be about. So again, maybe it's nothing. But again, this could have been a really good moment for the Trump campaign to really kind of put, you know, some subtle pressure on Hillary Clinton, and it's not. Now, we should point out that yesterday our favorite, Harry Reid, basically called Trump fat, and I think somebody else from David Plow for somebody said the same. Do you know when that would be a really resonant attack, Greg?
When?
When Trump clutches his heart and staggers over and keels over on a stage, okay? There's a reason people are really worried about Hillary Clinton's health right now. We just watched her collapse, right? If Trump does something like that, then these questions will get a lot more intense. But as it is, you know, whatever weight issues aside, we can't tell his blood pressure or anything else from looking at him. But we can just kind of tell that, you know, he certainly seems to have a decent energy level. He certainly seems fired up. He's maintaining a pretty tough campaign schedule. So, you know, we'll see how it shakes out. But this was a golden opportunity here. And if he refuses to go into any detail about his health, you know, it's possible the Democrats will be able to get the same, you know, traction of, what's wrong with Donald Trump right here?
Can't you just imagine what Trump's health advice would be based on his own life? Make sure you get at least 2.5-3 hours of sleep every night.
Tweet deep into the night. Just get angrier and angrier as you do it. And when he comes home, he likes to relax in his supermodel.
Oh, Jim, this just in. Not a lot of details. They taped the Dr. Oz show today, and apparently Trump surprised Dr. Oz with what looks like a one-page summary of his physical and says more details will be forthcoming. when they're available. I don't know how the bad turned into the crazy, but we still have a crazy martini to go. So here we go. And poor Colin Powell. He just keeps getting dragged back into this campaign when it's so obvious he wants nothing to do with it. We probably would have felt sorrier for him if he hadn't jumped on the Obama bandwagon in 2008 and 2012. But his private messages were hacked, and now they're leaked by a group called DC Leaks. Anyway, the emails show Powell regularly corresponding with reporters and friends about both Trump and Hillary Clinton. He referred to Trump as a national disgrace and an international pariah. And he also talked to friends and reporters about the Clinton email server scandal, explaining that his situation was different. Of course, when Powell arrived at the State Department, the technology was badly dated, and unlike Clinton, Powell never set up a private server, yada, yada, yada. But here's the part that we're going to talk about today. I'm going to add in my own generated bleep tone here. Quote, they are going to bleep up the legitimate and necessary use of emails with friggin' record rules. I saw email more like a telephone than a cable machine, Powell wrote last year to his business partner, Jeffrey Leeds. Quote, as long as the stuff is unclassified, I had a secure state.gov machine. Everything Hillary Rodham Clinton touches, she kind of screws up with hubris. Powell added in a tangential complaint, quote, I told you about the gig I lost at a university because she so overcharged them that they came under heat and couldn't pay any fees for a while. I should send her a bill. So, Jim, I'm kind of taken by the fact that he's this polite. I think if most people's emails got hacked, there'd be different language on a lot of these different things. Once again, yeah. Hillary Clinton has screwed things up, and it's funny to watch Colin Powell admit that he got denied a speaking gig because Hillary Clinton has such massive demands when she goes places.
That was my favorite part. I'll go to the second favorite part. So you wake up this morning, there's the headlines, Colin Powell's emails hacked, you know, and he called Trump a national embarrassment. Except I could, if he hasn't used those specific words, Greg, he's pretty much called Trump a national embarrassment in his public remarks. Like the great scandal of Colin Powell's email is that everything he was saying privately is pretty much what he was saying publicly. there really wasn't any secret view of Colin Powell, except the really funny one. People may remember Hillary Clinton going out and giving these these speeches to University of Nevada, Las Vegas, one to UCLA. And getting paid like $225,000 from UNLV. And I think it was like $300,000 from UCLA. And a lot of people – and, of course, what was she talking about? The rising cost of college education. Now, I don't know about you. My first guess would be, hey, stop paying old politicians six figures to give a tired old speech of the same old stuff and cliches and all that stuff. I don't buy the idea that these are great, you know, value creators for this. It strikes me as a way of rewarding the special people, rewarding the people that the university administrators think deserve to be rich. And the easiest way to do that is to pay them a ludicrously inflated speaking fee. This outrages Colin Powell, too, in a way. It mostly outrages him that he was supposed to get one, too. And she got greedy and she asked too much and she created so much controversy that some unnamed university, maybe UNLV, maybe UCLA, maybe another one, whatever that university was, they could not extend the same offer or a similar offer to Colin Powell. And ooh, does that leave him steamed? So, you know, I'm really hoping at some point, you know, he's obviously very anti-Trump, but if you could just tape an ad that just says Hillary Clinton, everything she touches, she destroys with hubris. I mean, if that doesn't make you want to run out to the polling place, Greg, I don't know what does.
Jim, I have an addendum to this story that I know will make your blood pressure go up high. This is from the Washington Times about less than a week ago. Hillary Clinton's campaign has come under fire from college students for charging hundreds of dollars just to attend a Conversation with Chelsea event. Penny-pinching students from Penn State University had little hope on Wednesday of engaging in a conversation with Chelsea Clinton since attendance alone cost $500. A photo with her could be obtained for $1,000, and access to a special reception required $2,700 for college students for Chelsea.
I believe that's Princess Chelsea to you, Greg. So obviously, if you can't afford Hillary, Chelsea's the discount, ludicrous speaker, to recite cliches. And I believe the children of the future, teach them well and they will lead the way, type remarks. You know, people know Chelsea Clinton is one of those, just jumps on my last nerve. if I were going to school and I were paying, undergoing black market kidney surgeries in order to pay for my tuition, I'd be really irked that my college keeps throwing giant amounts of money for celebrity speeches. That's not what a college is supposed to do. And I don't, in particular, I think it's kind of ridiculous, to at some point, if you really are committed to educating young people or something like that, at the very least, you got to give them a discount rate. I remember a sibling of one of my friends was on, I don't remember which school she went to, but they talk about bringing Magic Johnson, the NBA star, to campus to talk about leadership or inspiring lives or something like that. And I seemed to, he was signing basketballs and doing things like that. But I wanted to say it was something like, it was a minimum five-figure sum. And I just remember looking at that and saying, like, what, does Magic Johnson need the money? The idea of, like, why a school would consider that to be a good use of money compared to everything else they could spend it on. It really does look frivolous and silly, and probably contributes to the bursting of the higher education bubble, which I don't know about you, Greg. Every time I hear about that, I'm saying burst, baby, burst. I keep seeing coverage of it like it's a bad thing. No. It's a good thing from the point of view of parents who have to pay for it someday. So anyway, everybody's really unhappy and probably none of us angrier than Colin Powell.
Good way to end. Jim, talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks very much for being with us today, and tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.